Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, a Boston judge made what could be a landmark ruling on using climate change for what's known as a legal necessity defense. Let's go back in time here a little bit. Back in 2015 and 2016, hundreds of residents and climate activists gathered to protest the construction of a natural gas pipeline in West Roxbury and Dedham.
The sun is shining, and so are we.
So that's some sound of the protests from 2015 and 2016. And over the course of those protests, some 200 people were arrested. They were charged with various things, including trespassing and disturbing the peace. Now, more than a dozen of those protesters were set to go on trial this week on Tuesday. But on that day, Judge Marianne Driscoll found the defendants not responsible of lesser charges, saying that she believed their argument that their protest was necessary in order to fight the effects of climate change. Now, this could be the first ruling of its kind. So joining us now with more via Skype is Tim DeChristopher. He's the founder of the Climate Disobedience Center. He's also one of the defendants in this case. Tim DeChristopher, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Also with us in the studio is retired federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, welcome to you.
Good to be here.
Okay, so first of all, Tim, let me just get your quick reaction to what this ruling was that out of this Boston court. How did you respond?
Well, it was kind of a mix of reactions for me and for most of our defense team, because up to a week before this trial, we expected to be able to have a full trial with a full necessity defense, bringing in expert witnesses to make our case and meet all the elements of that case. But then just a week before the trial, the prosecution dropped what were misdemeanor charges to civil infraction charges, mm-hmm. which meant that we no longer had the opportunity for a jury trial. And so that was really a big disappointment for us. And it meant that rather than being able to put on probably a week-long trial with all of this evidence, we ended up having about 2 minutes apiece to make this whole case in front of the judge. And so we took that opportunity as best that we could. And I think did present a coherent case within that half an hour or so, and were able to convince the judge that all of that evidence was out there and that this was a necessity to take action. And so that was very encouraging with the options that were still remaining on the table by this week.
Right. So I just want to take a step back here and get some context from Judge Gertner. First of all, when we talk about a necessity defense, Judge Gertner, what does that mean?
Well, necessity defense is actually a very unusual defense in the criminal law, because what it essentially says is that you have taken a step which is characterized as a crime in order to avoid a greater harm. And it's not an economic harm. There are very, the usual, the law school paradigm is you're going down, the railroad train is going down the track. And if you go in one track, you'll hit one person. If you turn it in the other, you'll, destroy a town. Mm-hmm. And therefore you have you're justified in hitting that one person. So there are various, it's relative harms. It has to be imminent. There are very narrow circumstances. So it's quite extraordinary that the judge did what she did here.
Okay, so Tim DeChristopher, just again in sort of lay terms, is the argument that you were making that the climate change crisis is what necessitated the civil disobedience actions in Dedham and West Roxbury? Is that what you wanted to tell the judge?
Yeah, that's really the heart of it for a lot of us. We were arguing that this pipeline represents an imminent harm, and that one aspect of that imminent harm is the prospect of that pipeline not working correctly, as in an explosion, because it runs right next to an active blasting quarry. And that's certainly what motivated some of the people in that community to act. But also the imminent harm if that pipeline works as intended and continues to exacerbate the harms of fracking that is wreaking havoc on communities in the Midwest and continues to exacerbate climate change by getting more natural gas to be burned and end up in the atmosphere. So we really said that regardless of what happens with this pipeline, there is imminent harm that is having disastrous impacts on our communities and on communities around the world.
Okay, so Judge Gertner, I'm reading here that Judge Driscoll in court said that she found the defendants not responsible, again, because it never went to jury trial,
right.
But agreed with their argument that their actions were necessary, saying that based on the very heartfelt expressions of the defendants who believe, and I don't question their beliefs in any respect, who believe in their cause because they believe they were entitled to invoke the necessity defense, I'll accept what they said. Okay, so, but I guess my question is, you were saying it's unusual. Is this the first successful necessity defense using climate change of its kind that we know of?
It's hard to say. This is a district court decision, so that it will not necessarily produce a precedent for higher courts or courts in other parts of the country. But the model is an interesting model. Usually, civil disobedience claims don't work as a necessity defense. It's one thing to say you do it in the abstract, but usually they don't work as a matter of law. So this is unusual. She had to conclude that they reasonably believed that what they were doing was the lesser harm, that they thought that the harm was imminent, that this was the only alternative they have. It's a very narrow test. So it is extraordinary. I don't know whether it's, I would say it's extraordinary because this is, you understand that no one, that it could undo the criminal law. You can't say, for example, you can't use economic necessity because basically mm-hmm. that would justify so much. So it is a very narrow prong of the criminal law and a narrow defense.
So just to be sure I understand it correctly, though, it has to do with the belief about harm, not necessarily proving relative harm.
Right. It has to be a reasonable belief. In other words, someone can't be making it up. It has to be, they have to have reasonably believed that their acts were necessary to prevent a greater harm.
Okay. So, Tim DeChristopher, to Judge Gertner's point about this being a narrow ruling in a Boston court and that it wouldn't necessarily have any precedent on higher courts, nevertheless, are climate activists such as you now, do you feel emboldened to bring the same necessity defense to further cases down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the kind of defense that a lot of us have been trying to make on a lot of different campaigns in recent years, and have gotten certain aspects of it. And as far as we can tell, this is the first time that we've had an affirmative ruling like this on a climate case. The Climate Defense Project is a group of recent Harvard Law School graduates, Kelsey Skaggs, Alice Cherry, and Ted Hamilton, who have done a lot of research on this and helped us prepare this case. And it's the first one they've seen of their kind. We also had a lot of support on this from the National Lawyers Guild Mass Defense Chapter, which represented all 200 of the defendants who were arrested in this campaign. Mm. And it's for them, they've had necessity defense rulings that have won on other types of protest case, like other issues, but never on a climate issue. And so, so this does seem to be a new thing, and certainly something that we can invoke as an encouragement, even though it doesn't set a binding precedent.
I see. Well, Tim DeChristopher, founder of the Climate Disobedience Center, one of the 13 defendants in this interesting, potentially landmark case in Boston, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And by the way, we did reach out to Enbridge, the company that now owns Spectra Energy, the Spectra Energy Pipeline. So folks know, the pipeline was constructed. It's in operation now. And an Enbridge spokesperson told us, quote, "The pipeline is in service. The court has issued its decision. We have no further comment." Judge Gertner, before I let you go, there's a couple of other sort of legal
stuff,
shenanigans,
right?
Things,
legal stuff
that I wanted to talk to you about,
right?
since I've got you. First of all, let's talk about the FBI, the ongoing investigation into potential ties between the Trump campaign and Russia, specifically Paul Manafort and Russia. Because I'm seeing here that in documents filed this week, prosecutors for Special Counsel Robert Mueller are alleging that Manafort and Rick Gates were in touch with a business associate who had ongoing ties with Russian intelligence. What does this signal to you about what Robert Mueller is up to?
Well, what he's doing is what prosecutors typically do, is he's starting from the bottom and building up. He's basically, so we started with the, not started with, but you had the 13 Russians who were indicted for hacking into the, for interfering in the election and dealing with Facebook bots, et cetera. Now you have a more direct connection between someone with ties to, or at least an allegation, ties to an intelligence the community in Russia, And what's significant about this is that the filing talks about 2016. In other words, that this is not something going on now, but that it was also something that had been going on in 2016. And Gates, as you recall, is cooperating with the government. So this may well be the tip of the iceberg. But what Mueller is doing is building the little bricks of a case and seeing how far it goes. It may or may not go all the way to the top. But certainly this is closer to the Trump campaign than any accusation we've seen so far.
I mean, but the Trump campaign repeatedly says that that's a lot of this has nothing to do with them, that the original stuff about Manafort had preceded when he was attached to the campaign. But this is specifically during the period of the campaign.
That's right. And Gates had a role in the campaign, and this is occurring during 2016. But again, you have to think of it like bricks in a wall. These are bricks at the lower level. This is getting a little bit higher. This is now not somebody that you can, sort of say is not very important in the campaign. I mean, he was certainly involved in the campaign. And then how far up that wall is going to go, who knows? But the we've already established, or at least Mueller through the indictment has alleged, that there is a there. There is a Russian connection to the American election, both through efforts to hack it and through the Facebook social media stuff. This is now a connection between that, arguably, and at least someone like Gates and Papadopoulos and who knows what else.
Okay.
The other thing about Mueller, which is really quite remarkable, and as I've mentioned, I've known him and opposed him in cases, there are no leaks from his operation.
Nothing.
This is someone who is looking at this carefully and I think sort of not being distracted by the noise around him. So I think it's a very interesting development.
And so much noise. So much noise.
Are we going to talk about Stormy Daniels?
Since we have before two other times, I feel like we have our ongoing Stormy Daniels segment with Nancy Gertner. But I do want to just, because this is something related that you talked to us beforehand, because we were talking about the possibility of President Trump maybe facing deposition in the Stormy Daniels case. But today, we're seeing just a little while ago, a federal judge in California has put a temporary stop to efforts by Stormy Daniels and her lawyer to depose President Trump and Michael Cohen.
Well, it's actually the reverse in a way. Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Avenatti, asked for an expedited trial.
Right.
And an expedited discovery process. And the judge says, I could see this tongue in cheek, saying, I got a lot of important stuff in my docket. This is really not the top of the list. I'm not going to expedite anything here. And when you think about it, that makes a whole lot of sense. So it's not that there won't be a deposition down the line. It's just there won't be a deposition out of the usual course of events.
Okay. Well, Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. She's also WBUR's legal analyst. I'm sure we'll have you back again to talk about all things legal and probably more Stormy Daniels. Judge Gertner, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.